from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum. I'm Joshua Johnson, sitting in for Mina Kim. Once upon a time, monitoring your health meant having a scale and a blood pressure monitor at home. Today, you can measure so much more with the watch on your wrist or the smartphone in your pocket. Silicon Valley is pushing into personal health care in big ways, with lots of startups changing how people take care of their bodies. But do these changes actually make us healthier? Whatever happened to just going to the doctor? And for that matter, what happens to all this data these devices collect on us? In this hour, we'll consider those questions and more. The digital future of your health. Next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum. Good morning. I'm Joshua Johnson of KQED News, sitting in for Mina Kim. Every fan of Star Trek has dreamed of what it would be like to have a tricorder. That's that handheld device that could scan and diagnose anyone or anything. Today, we are still waiting for our tricorders, but we're getting closer with an array of startups pushing healthcare into the digital age. Some are activity trackers that you wear on your wrist. Others take it a step further, offering to help people at risk of chronic, deadly diseases. In this hour of Forum, we'll explore some of these startups, consider the issues around them, and try to find out if they're bringing us further into the future or just selling more science fiction. Joining us in studio is Stephanie Telenius. She is the founder and CEO of Vita Health, a personalized health coaching app. Stephanie, welcome to Forum.
Welcome. It's great to be here.
Joining us by phone from Miami is Sean Duffy. He is co-founder and CEO of Omada Health, a startup that coaches people through chronic conditions like diabetes, heart disease, and obesity. Sean, good morning.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Also here in the studio is Anya Schies. She is the founder of Healthy Ventures, a seed stage venture capital fund focused on digital health technologies. Omada is one of Healthy Ventures' investments. Anya, glad to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
And KQED's Christina Farr is with us for the hour. Christina is the editor of one of our newest projects, The Future of You, a blog focused on how technology is revolutionizing medicine. Christina, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Let me start with you, Christina. Give us an overview of where all this stands right now. I'm sure there are certain sectors of healthcare that these startups are pushing into more than others, but generally speaking, what does the landscape look like right now?
Well, digital health is exploding. Last year, we saw record investments in the field, $4.1 billion, which was more than we saw in the previous 3 years combined. So investors are really looking at the space, and it's a whole range of things. It's not just health monitoring and tracking. It's more serious kind of measurement tools for chronic disease. It's medical devices. It's life sciences. It's sort of all wrapped up into this one space of health and technology kind of combined for the first time. And a lot of this has been driven by policy reforms. So both the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare and prior to that, something called the High Tech Act, which put billions of dollars into a program that would push healthcare into the digital age. So a lot of investment followed that, and it's really, really diverse. What we're going to see next is, I think, a whole continuation of this trend and, you know, yet more excitement about digital health and how it can really transform the patient experience.
What's been gaining traction with consumers so far? I mean, a lot of us have heard about Fitbit and Jawbone and, you know, the Nike Fuel Band, these activity trackers. Is that kind of the extent of what consumers are latching on to, or is it more than that?
I think, yeah, you're right. We are seeing a lot of wearables. So, you know, whether it's the new Apple Watch, which a lot of people are talking about, some people in the studio today even have one.
We won't call out who.
So certainly it's the wearable trend is huge. I think we're also seeing apps for things like tracking your food and nutrition. And I use a couple of different things so that I can see whether I could be perhaps cutting down on sugar the next week and whether I've been having the right amount of protein every day. So I use an app called Rise for that. And a lot of other people are interested in nutrition. And I think we're also starting to see now kind of rather than just apps that collect data, it's we've sort of moved into this new age of insights. So all of these technologies that want to take all the data that you're collecting from the different apps and devices that you use and sort of correlate it. So maybe it's to show you that if you slept only 5 or 6 hours last night, that you weren't able to run as fast today on your morning run. So it's these kinds of insights that you can use and not just showing you, say, how many steps you've walked every day. And I think that's sort of the next frontier for these technologies.
Google's doing its developers conference in San Francisco this week. And one of the things they mentioned in their mammoth opening plenary speech at Google I.O. was about the new updates in Android Wear that will allow devices to, for example, tell the difference between whether you're doing squats or bench presses or whether you're running or bicycling. So it seems like it's not only the technology is getting more sensitive to what you are actually doing and painting an ever more exact picture of you.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing. I wrote a story recently about smart wearable clothing. So rather than just having fitness bands for your wrist that can just do simple step tracking, now we have things like full-on shirts that are just covered in sensors, and they can even tell your muscle how like much your muscles are moving and whether, for instance, when you're working out, you're going too hard on one set of muscles versus another.
That feels highly intimate.
It is. I mean, some people
sure
might be weirded out by that.
I'm not sure I want to get that close to my computer.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a fitness fan, you know, people are flocking to this kind of thing.
I'm a fitness fan, but, well, I'm skeptical. Anya Sheese, give me your top 2 or 3 criteria for any investment that your fund makes. What are the kind of non-negotiable essential traits of a digital health startup that would make it worth your while?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think first is laser focus in the near term, but really an extensible platform. So in fact, as we'll probably hear from Sean later, that's something that Omada's done really, really well. The second thing is it really needs to be a product and an idea that can extract value in a more frictionless way. So healthcare is all about behavior patterns, whether we're talking about providers, whether we're talking about patients, and changing behavior is really, really difficult. So if we can get the outcome we want in a more frictionless, you know, meaning easier to change way, we're really looking for that as well.
Making healthcare just less painful bureaucratically to deal with. I mean, a number of your startups deal with, some of your startups, I believe, deal with kind of that messy back-end infrastructure part of healthcare that is the part that everyone is just trying to fight their way through so they can get to the doctor.
Absolutely. It's incredibly, incredibly siloed, incredibly inefficient. Really, the back end is difficult right now, but it creates a huge opportunity for a lot of companies that are solving these problems. And, you know, we think over the next 3 to 5 years, that's really going to be an interesting, interesting area of investment.
Let's talk about some of these companies. You'd mentioned Omada, so let's go to that one. Sean Duffy, talk about Omada. As I understand it, it's designed to create services to put people on programs to help prevent chronic diseases like diabetes. 29 million Americans have diabetes, according to the CDC, and about 8 million are undiagnosed. How does Omada claim to help with this?
Yeah, so Joshua, you're completely right. I mean, diabetes is really the crisis of our century. The CDC estimates that 40% of adults over the course of their lifespan will at some point find out they have type 2 on given trend. And our company actually got its start in response to something called the CDC's National Diabetes Prevention Program, which is working to make very proven, trusted lifestyle intervention and weight loss programs for people with prediabetes or at high risk for type 2 standard of care across the U.S. And Omada are really our start. And then, you know, the initial kind of use for our platform is a translation of the CDC standards and the CDC program, where we use some of the data from these amazing tools and sensors that come out, but build a software experience and a 16-week program around them to guide people, toward, weight loss and positive improvements in their health.
What kinds of results are you seeing so far?
So it's been really neat. I mean, if you unpack some of the clinical literature in the space, what you quickly find is social relationships and peer support drive a lot of the outcomes. And people and humanity is interacting with technology in a way that allows you to form those relationships from afar. So with Omada's program, we match people into groups. We pair them with a remote health coach. We mail them a digital scale. We kick them off in a curriculum. It's a very kind of high-touch intervention, and it tends to work because you feel like you're not alone, you know, on this journey. You have reference points for success. You have kind of shared goals. And we see that in the literature, in the data, and we publish our results. So, our first publication It really demonstrated equivalency with the CDC standards, which was 1 year of data. We just published our 2 year of data. The VA ran a study with us, and they're out, speaking about it. So far, so good. We've been showing that we can match or exceed the results of these, trusted face-to-face programs.
Why do you think that this is exceeding the traditional face-to-face programs? What makes Omada excel?
Well, I think a piece of it is convenience. So, chronic disease, treatment interventions really requires interventions between the doctor's visits. And the best programs and the most efficacious programs in a face-to-face setting really do require a lot of time. And they require people to come in on a weekly basis over the course of 16 weeks. And that's difficult for a person because, invariably Susie's soccer practice is at 5 p.m. on Wednesday and you can't make that session and then you lose momentum. So digital allows for a little bit more flexibility. People are living their lives in front of, screens these days, and you have to change their lifestyle. You have to kind of meet them where they are and make it flexible.
Stephanie Telenius, let me put a similar question to you about Vita. Why would I want to share my personal information with a coach through Vita who's not physically here with me, who's just online? What makes that better, or at least maybe a reasonable substitute for an in-person encounter?
Well, we hear such amazing stories from our users. They're willing to share information with their health coach that they wouldn't share with their doctor. And we've had doctors who refer Vita to customers who tell us that they've seen movements in A1C. They've seen blood sugar improvements, reduction in hypertension, reduction in blood cholesterol, lots of improvements in health metrics because it's a personal relationship. It's a one-on-one relationship always with you. We have some amazing testimonials where people text and communicate with their coach every day. They have a video consultation and they feel really heard and understood. And for the first time, they're getting that continuous care that they need along the path. And they share all the metrics. And it's a very personalized one-on-one relationship. We also have teams as well. And people feel supported.
So you've been getting some pretty good early results so far.
Mm-hmm.
And I take it that I'm hearing this theme of personalization and fitting into people's lives. It almost sounds like this is the kind of a problem that traditional medical institutions should have been solving, and that you, Stephanie, through your startup, certainly, but a number of others, have been able to kind of chisel your way in through a problem and say, we can provide a solution.
Absolutely. We provide really personalized care. So we connect you instantly on your phone with a national network of health experts. And if you have prediabetes or diabetes or hypertension or pretty stress, if you want to lose weight, we can handle pretty much any of these issues. And we have multiple programs in the cloud, but the beauty is that the coach can actually customize it to your needs. So if you are pre-diabetic, we do have the diabetes prevention program, but let's say you have high stress, we also have programs for that. Or if you want to handle a specific type of a nutritional approach, we'll customize it so that right on your phone, every day you're getting a very, one-on-one experience that is tailored to you.
I'm interested in that program for high stress. As soon as you said high stress, I was like, I don't know what you think you can do for me, but good luck. But what about where are the coaches? Are they distributed across the country? Are they all local to the Bay Area? Where are they?
They're distributed, and we have nurses, diabetes educators, medical assistants, physicians, all sorts of folks who are clinically trained and credentialed and have had years and years of experience of dealing with different patient outcomes and helping physicians as well achieve those outcomes.
We're discussing digital health startups with Sean Duffy of Omada, Stephanie Telenius of Vita Health, Anya Sheese of Healthy Ventures, and KQED's Christina Farr. Join the conversation. I'm wondering if you have used any of these apps, these new devices, to try to improve your health. Did they help? Did they not help? Was it more hype? Was it more hope or more hype? What would you like to see? What worked? What didn't? We'd like your feedback. Or for that matter, if you're not using these devices, why not? Is it perhaps you don't feel you need them? Maybe you're not quite comfortable with them yet? We want to get your feedback. Call us, 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. Email us. The address is forum@kqed.org. You can also post your comments online. Go to kqed.org/forum. Christina Farr, all of this monitoring kind of reminds me how some newer cars have a lot more diagnostic information through the dashboard these days. You know, a deluxe model will tell you about fuel efficiency, how many miles you can go on your, how much gas is in the tank, how much of a charge your battery has. What do you make of this trend toward having a personal dashboard? I don't know if I want to see what's under my hood at all times, but what do you make of this trend?
Well, I think it's most interesting when the dashboard presents the data in a way that really correlates with your schedule. So if it's sending you data around the clock constantly, if you're a patient, you probably don't have time to really care about that and look at that. And if you're a doctor, you certainly don't have time. I think you'd want to see that data maybe once in the morning and maybe once at night about kind of a subset of your patients to see how they're doing. So I think we need a lot of care and attention about how that data is presented in the first place. And then, of course, you know, some people feel that they don't want to have these companies collecting their very sensitive health information. And there are certainly rules around that. And we have, you know, HIPAA, for instance, which is kind of a set of requirements that these companies need to meet around privacy and security. But, you know, this is very much an evolving space. And there are some companies that are better than others about adhering to these rules. And, you know, there's certainly been some concerns on part of the government about, you know, these health data brokers that want to sell your personal health information to advertisers and other third parties. So I think, you know, we're certainly moving in this direction of this full-time health monitoring and these dashboards, but we also really need to be wary and conscious of the companies that we choose to trust in the process.
I remember Fitbit got into trouble back in 2011, I think it was, because they were posting on the public profiles of users some of the data inadvertently was going public, and apparently that data made it clear what the user's sexual activity was, that it could infer, from like heart rates and activity levels, whether a person was doing whatever they were doing. And some of that information, obviously Fitbit apologized, they took the info down, but it kind of begs the question, Sean Duffy, I'll put this to you, it kind of begs the question as to why I should trust you with my information. Why should I put, or any consumer, put their personal information in Omada's hands?
Well, so firstly, we actually consider ourselves as a provider under HIPAA. And so, you know, privacy and security, you know, has been really number one from, you know, incorporating the company. And there's a lot that goes into that. I mean, there's security procedures that you institute inside the company to make sure that data is incredibly protected in very few people's hands. But second to that, we don't show things publicly without asking the person, right? If you're in our program, you can't really see what anyone else's weight is. You can, of course, share that with the group, but we allow you to do that versus us kind of taking onus on it and you know, doing that on your behalf. So we're incredibly cautious there and really put it in the hands of the person on what they want to share. And unlike Fitbit, we're not a consumer company. I mean, we're an enterprise company. We do work with self-insured employers and health plans to help with their obesity-related chronic disease crises. And, you know, with that, we don't have really a kind of a public face where you could accidentally post something and have it appear in a broader audience, maybe not realizing that it was there.
Stephanie Telenius, what about Vita Health? Why should people trust Vita Health with their information?
So we are also HIPAA compliant, and we don't share the data with anyone. You can choose to share your personal profile with your team members if you invite a family member or a friend or another caregiver on your team. But the data is entirely private and not shared. And we do work with employers and health plans as well, but that data is not shared. It's all de-identified data. And this is very standard now in the healthcare industry. And I think, I know we talk a lot about security and we take it very seriously. But what we have learned is that these services are generally, you know, if they're HIPAA compliant, they are pretty secure and consumers can feel safe using them.
Let's go to the phones now, 866-733-6786, beginning with Nazin in San Francisco. Nazin, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm well. Thank you. What's on your mind?
I actually had a very similar question to the one that was just discussed around HIPAA compliance. I think it's really cool what a lot of folks in healthcare technology are doing. And it's also great to hear that so many of these apps are actually HIPAA compliant. I didn't know that. My question then becomes, what about whose onus, on whom does it fall to actually maintain HIPAA compliance? Is there a governing body? Is there anyone actually making sure that apps that the common consumer can use and share their health data on are in fact HIPAA compliant and that their data is safe.
Nazeem, that's a good question. Let me put that to KQED's Christina Farr. Is there anyone minding the store?
Well, I actually have a little bit of a problem with the term HIPAA compliant, because I think that there are companies that say that they are HIPAA compliant, but in fact, the thing that their app is doing isn't necessarily covered by HIPAA, but they say that kind of as a way to show that they are, you know, in fact, secure. So it's sort of it's a commonly used term, but it's a little bit of a misnomer. And as for kind of this question of how do we know that these apps are, you know, safe and sort of doing what they say they're doing? In my own reporting, I've sort of called for, you know, more of a watchdog entity. I think we need that. And it's really sort of been not clear to me, covering healthcare, you know, who's responsible. So, for instance, would it be Apple or Google if it was an app on their app store? Would they be monitoring these companies and making sure that they're not selling health data? And certainly these companies do have strict rules around it. But who is actually making sure that those rules are enforced? Or is it a government body? And I think, you know, mobile health is still so emerging that we're very much in the process of sort of figuring that out. And it's currently a little bit of a touch and go situation. So I think, you know, as a consumer, the thing to be aware of is look for the sort of marketing, look for the claims. And if you see, you know, a dermatology app, for instance, that tells you that it can diagnose your suspicious mole and tell you whether it's cancerous or not by taking a photo, I mean, probably I wouldn't necessarily trust that app, even if it says it's HIPAA compliant.
Well, medical diagnoses are supposed to be, are much more under the purview of the FDA and you know, licensed doctors. And that's something that you need a medical professional to do, right?
Absolutely. And certainly, you know, these apps exist. And I think, you know, certainly we should have cracked down on them by now. But there are other types of services like Armada and Vita that are doing health coaching. And that is very much some, you know, they've got certified doctors and they're working with your primary care physician. And these are services that I think, you know, have been vetted. So it's kind of right now, it's sort of up to you as a consumer to sort of be vigilant.
Briefly, Anya Sheese, before we go to break, what do you make of this regulatory climate? How does that affect you as a potential investor thinking down the road with these, and you invest on a seed stage, very, very early investments. How does that affect your thinking in terms of the regulatory climate that your investments might face down the road? Briefly, before we go to break.
Sure, Joshua. Great question. It can be HIPAA. It can be FDA. It can be all of these different governing bodies. And I think at our stage, it's really about common sense because it will evolve and we have to be ready and the companies have to be ready to evolve as regulations do.
So they just kind of have to stay on their toes, basically.
Absolutely.
Okay. And Sean Duffy, can you respond briefly to Christina's concern about saying that you are HIPAA compliant and what that actually means in practice?
Yeah, I actually agree because it's, you know, HIPAA is a very complicated you know, thing. There's federal HIPAA laws, there's state HIPAA laws, and you need to comply with both. Interestingly, the entities that typically hold you to task are the customers that you contract with, right? So if you're, you know, contracting, you know, with a Kaiser Permanente, which is a partner of Armada, they put you through a really rigorous security review. They look at all your HIPAA policies, they look at how you handle data, you know, and they really ensure that you're up to snuff of their internal compliance groups.
Right, right. Sean, I'm sorry to cut you short. We're coming up on a break. I'll let you finish your thought on the other side. We'll continue our conversation on digital health startups with Sean Duffy of Armada, Stephanie Telenius of Vina, Anya Sheese of Healthy Ventures, and KQED's Christina Farr. I'm Joshua Johnson. This is Forum from KQED Public Radio. This is Forum from KQED Public Radio. I'm Joshua Johnson of KQED News, sitting in for Mina Kim. We're discussing digital health startups with Sean Duffy of Omada, Stephanie Telenius of Vita, Anya Sheese of Healthy Ventures, and KQED's Christina Farr, the editor of our blog, The Future of You. We welcome your questions and thoughts. Please call us, 866-733-6786. Email us. The address is forum@kqed.org. You can also find us on Facebook or Twitter. Tweet us. We are at KQED Forum. By the way, Christina recently published an opinion piece from the founder of another digital health venture fund called Rock Health with cautionary advice for entrepreneurs in this sector. You'll find it and more of our coverage on technology and medicine online at kqed.org/futureofyou. Sean Duffy, you were making a point before the break. Sorry to have cut you off. Let me let you finish your point now.
Yeah, this was just on HIPAA compliance and really abiding by all the state and federal laws around HIPAA. And my point was that, you know, in many times your customers really hold you to task. So through the contracting, you know, process with big employers and health plans, they review all your policies and procedures and how you know, operate from a security standpoint inside the company, and they won't sign the contracts unless they're comfortable. So that, to some extent, is a check and balance in the system.
And one of our Twitter users had asked about the data breach at Anthem that happened recently in terms of taking tremendous amounts of users' information. Stephanie Telenius, you were discussing during the break how very difficult it is to do this kind of data health compliance, that whoever hacked into Anthem, that looks like the act of organized crime. Like, it's not just something that some guy in the garage, presumably, would be able to do, and that the bar for saying that you are compliant with all these federal rules is really not only high, but onerous.
It is very high, and it is onerous. I mean, we had to make a very, it was a very difficult decision to decide to be HIPAA compliant, but that's our business. And the way you store data, share data, how you structure your tech stack, your systems, everything has to adhere to HIPAA. And for me, it's very similar to the way credit card information is shared. It's PCI compliance. There's a whole standard set of bodies around HIPAA and PCI, and you have to, you know, agree upfront that you're going to build your company that way. And a lot of startups are not able to do that or haven't done that from the beginning.
Let's dive back in on the phones now, 866-733-6786. Let's hear from Russ in Berkeley. Russ, good morning.
Hey, good morning. I'm Russ Mitchell. I'm technology editor at the Los Angeles Times. There's a lot of great stuff that's going to come out of this area, including perhaps from people on this panel. But as an editor who's being pitched by public relations people and people starting new companies, I have to say that there's more hype in this health app area than in any other area that we deal with. Just as a couple small examples, and there are hundreds, a watch app comes out that tells a physician that somebody's in the waiting room or in the exam room. I talked to a doctor who said, well, you know what? I use my eyes for that. Somebody earlier on the program mentioned people that, would use an app to find out that they're running more slowly because they got 5 hours sleep the other night. Well, I'd have to think that if you need an app to tell you that you're running slowly or if you got 5 hours sleep, you probably have problems more serious than an app is going to help you with. So because this area deals with people's health, it's incumbent on anybody who's considering using any of these to be extra careful because, in my experience, the amount of garbage compared to the amount of good stuff coming out is really, really high.
Russ, let me ask you, have you seen anything, and you don't have to drop a brand name on us, but where are you seeing the frontier in terms of ideas you look at and go, that's worthwhile? I'm so glad someone finally came out with that. What are you seeing?
Well, it's real basic stuff. It's the fitness, tracking is really good. You can track how much exercise you're getting, when you can track your medications, when you can track things like your blood pressure, your heart rate, insulin levels. Those kind of things are really helpful because they really do help keep you, but the thing is, there's only a certain number of those that you can do out there. And I see so many apps that pretend to be helping people do things that are only going to confuse them. So again, I'm not dumping on the category whatsoever. There's great stuff out there, but there's so much that is not great, and it's all getting all mixed up together. It's a problem in other areas of technology now because we're in the midst of a technology boom.
Right.
But it's especially important because, we're talking about people's health.
I hear you. Russ, thanks for the call. Much appreciated. Christina Farr, what do you think? What do you make of that?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting comment because in my reporting experience, I often saw that some of this digital health stuff would fall between traditional tech and health bureaus. So often it was one of the most undercovered areas. And only recently, are we seeing, with kind of the entrance of Google and Apple and some other big companies, kind of more of an interest in it. So I've had a slightly different take. But I do think it's a great point that there isn't a way to sort of tell the difference between some of the apps that are genuinely useful and doing kind of standout work versus all of the clutter out there. I would love to see things like, and I think this did exist at one point but has now been shut down, but say an app store for doctors where all of the apps on that store are vetted by some kind of body, and doctors know, for instance, which ones that they can use and trust and have met HIPAA requirements and that they can give to their patients and recommend to them. But there isn't anything like that currently, as far as I know. So I do think we need kind of more of these technologies that can sort of help us tell the difference and to navigate this sort of exploding space a little bit better.
We've got some great calls on the line. I'll get to those in just a minute, but I want to go through some of our email comments. One listener writes, as a relatively healthy and fit person who tends to obsess too much over detail in general, the majority of this technology seems to me like overkill. Health is one part of my life that I prefer to keep at both a safe proximity and a distance. Another listener writes, I've been using an app for my iPhone called Daily Water, and it has been a fantastic tool to increase my daily water intake from an average of 3 glasses a day to around 8 and even more. I can think clearer, my skin feels better, I can move easier. The only problem is you need to be close to a bathroom more times a day, but it's totally worth the trade-off. Another listener writes, one of my favorite health apps is called First Opinion. It's free and anonymous and allows you to text a doctor 24/7 with questions. This has been really helpful for me as a young mom when I have little questions about rashes or coughs that my kids have. I used it during my last pregnancy as well as for advice and information. Response time is incredible, 1 or 2 minutes, and you're matched with one doctor, so you're building a relationship over time, and my doctor checks in with me all the time. I love it. 866-733-6786. Let's go to Arthur in Palo Alto. Arthur, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you. What's on your mind?
Yes, I'm with a digital health startup called Psyche Analytics. And what we do is we help the physicians screen their patients for mental health and behavioral health conditions that can affect primary care. So we're the interface before some of the things that were, guests have. So when the patient comes to the waiting room or when they're scheduling an appointment, they go on a website, and they enter screening information that can help the doctor determine whether or not there are mental health conditions or behavioral health conditions that the doctor was not aware of and should be aware of and maybe follow up on.
So it's kind of got one foot in the waiting room and one foot in the doctor's office and interfaces the two. Is that it?
That's correct. And since the doctor only has a few minutes to meet with a patient, it's very important to get this additional information to the doctor so the doctor can be aware of it and treat it accordingly.
And Arthur, how are you finding the landscape in terms of navigating all this regulatory and marketing stuff that we've been talking about this hour?
Well, in terms of the regulatory stuff, we are using a data provider that keeps the data safe. We also don't store too much personal identifying information in our records. Instead, that information is primarily a link to the electronic health record that the doctor's office has. So that minimizes the chances of our data being breached and of having any use from it.
Gotcha. Well, Arthur, I got to keep moving on the phone, but thank you very much for sharing your comment and best of luck to you with your startup. Let me get to another email or another online message. Vupala writes, it is a very good idea to encourage startups in the health sector to cut down the costs for insurers. Christina, I wanted to ask you about this because one of my colleagues has a Fitbit, one of those activity tracker bracelets, and she told me yesterday that her insurance company lowered her insurance rate based on the data that she collected on her Fitbit. And so now she's paying less for health insurance. And I'm thinking, well, A, good for you. B, I wish I knew who to report my weekly visits to the gym to because I'd like to save some money on insurance too. This seems like it's got tremendous opportunity for consumers to kind of proactively prove that they're less of a health risk. But at the same time, there's got to be a catch. There's got to be a downside.
I think this is just a fascinating trend, the sort of partnerships between insurers, employers, and sort of some of these wearables companies, as well as companies like Vita, who are here today. On the health insurance side, I think you're a little bit more safe because health insurance is, you know, just in general, there's sort of more rules around it. You can't be denied health insurance for pre-existing conditions. But life insurance, I mean, there was recently a story that came out of the first life insurer in the U.S. that was partnering with a wearable provider. And, you know, there were all kinds of privacy issues related to this, because certainly you could get lower rates if you were, you know, showing that you were working out all the time and very healthy. But what about new moms who, for medical reasons, for instance, aren't able to be as active as they were previously? Are they going to be penalized for this? So, again, this is one of these things that is promising, but I think, you know, we do need to be a little bit cautious and wary, because, you know, it is great when you are saving money and like your colleague, but, you know, what about the sort of flip side, and are we going to see kind of people being penalized?
Sean Duffy, I wonder if you could weigh in on, I don't know if it's so much about people being penalized, but, you know, we know that healthcare is not distributed evenly in this country. It is often a function of income, and income has historical ties to race in this culture. And so I can't help but envisioning this kind of Elysium-like situation where people who are of a higher economic class can get access to more and more of these services as they become less general consumer and more stratified consumer. And people who are lower on the economic ladder are locked out increasingly of services like what you offer because they can't even afford, you know, primary care or basic care for themselves or their family. What do you see in terms of the future of this landscape in terms of making sure that everyone has access to the best healthcare innovations?
Sure. So, one of the reasons we're an enterprise company, not a consumer company, is because we want to make sure that, evidence-based and proven interventions can reach all, including folks who are, on either the lower, socioeconomic status, spectrum. And I think that's incredibly important. I think from a technology standpoint, the tech usage trends are spreading both in folks who are underserved and older, across the board. And it's important to us at Omada to make sure that we're selling to payers and employers who really are carrying the insurance risk and the health risk for people who may not be as fortunate as others, and that they're covering the program for people who are not as fortunate as others.
We got a bunch of phone calls on the line. Let's go back to the phones with Naomi in Menlo Park. Naomi, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
What's on your mind, Naomi?
I just can't believe how much junk we are being poured upon from these companies. I mean, it's just like unbelievable. People buy more and more and more stuff that's really not needed, and people make so much money out of us.
Are you talking about these various devices and gadgets and whatnot?
Exactly. All over the place. And this is just one of them.
I'm guessing you've never bought any of these, like a Fitbit bracelet or any of that stuff.
No, I don't. I didn't.
What would it take for them to reach you? Like, what would it take for them to make something that you would buy?
No. Don't even try. Anyway, I really appreciate it, but I don't even know. I mean, I can see that some of the stuff are helpful in some ways, but as far as I see it, the big picture, it's these really smart people on the top making so much money over us. And they really don't understand it, but this is pretty much it.
All right. Naomi, thanks for calling. I recognize that she is not maybe part of the audience, but perhaps we'll have better luck with Denise in San Francisco. Denise, good morning.
Good morning. I do own the Nike band. I also have used the water app on my phone. I'm really educated on food and exercise. I diet. I eat right. I'm active. I never intend to have a child, but my health insurance rates are extreme. And I'm tired of subsidizing people who smoke, aren't fit, and really have no care about their health. And that's really all I have to say. I hate that I'm paying for people who are smokers and drinkers and everything else, and I try so hard to take care of myself that I should get credit for that.
I want to make sure I fully understand where you're coming from. Are you talking about these digital health innovations as a way to help people not live those unhealthful lifestyles? Is that what you're referring to?
Well, I think it definitely, I'm very educated on all of it, and it still helps me. It keeps me focused. It keeps me on track. It gives me a way to check in. But some people aren't even interested in that knowledge. So if it were something that I could have my insurance rates reduced, because I actually, every app I download in MyFitnessPal and, logging my food, logging my water, exercising with a Fitbit or any other one of those devices, all those things I would love it if my insurance would go for that, you know, if they would pay attention to that.
Gotcha.
And I think the people who aren't hooked up that way, you know, I end up paying for them.
Hey, Denise, thanks for the comment. Stephanie Telenius, did you want to chime in on that?
I was just going to say that in the Obamacare legislation, there are such a thing as incentives, and employers are allowed to offer participation incentives as well as outcomes incentives. So we're working with employers, Fortune 500 employers across the country, where they will offer, to your point, benefits if you show that you are active and healthy and really taking a proactive approach to your health. You can get as much up to $2,500 back per year from your insurance company through your employer as through incentives. So it is possible for people to actually get credit for their behavior.
We did get a comment on Facebook as it relates to wellness programs, actually expressing some concern about those programs. Jeff wrote us on Facebook, many companies are adopting wellness programs, which are marketed as saving money by making employees healthier. However, the real profit motive is shifting healthcare costs to employees. It's a shame to see some of these incredible new technologies used as smoke and mirrors to promote these policies. Few employee wellness programs protect the privacy of employee health information and don't use them to shift healthcare costs. It would be great to see such invasive profiteering wellness programs banned and these great technologies utilized for good. So, Stephanie, clearly there's some skepticism to work through. Anya Shees, you wanted to chime in?
Yeah, I mean, I disagree with the comment a little bit, because if you look at just lost productivity in addition to direct health costs, lost productivity is often 2 to 4 times higher than direct health costs. So wellness can save direct health costs, but from an employer's perspective, they're often more interested in the improved productivity that they can get from a healthier worker population.
It's that whole ounce of prevention versus a pound of cure thing.
Absolutely.
Anya, what are we seeing in terms of digital innovations other than personal coaching type apps? Are there any other frontiers that are maybe lesser known, lesser noticed, but that are still kind of growing and thriving?
Yeah, absolutely. Great question. So I think there's a broad spectrum, and I won't talk about the business-to-business side, which is a lot of the kind of back-end technology, things like that. But on more the consumer-facing side, in addition to wellness, there are actual consumer medical devices. CellScope, a company here in town, with, for example, an otoscope that attaches to your cell phone and would allow for diagnosis. So we have that. We have genomics, the revolution.
Define otoscope.
Otoscope would be the attachment that goes, or the device that looks into your ear.
Thank
so
you.
That you can diagnose an ear infection.
Okay,
for
just
example.
Making sure. For those of our audience who did not pass their medical boards, I just want to make sure everybody's on line with that.
Sorry about that.
What else are you saying?
Yeah, the genomics revolution and the kind of transformation that's going to happen. President Obama mentioned in his State of the Union address precision medicine and that initiative. It's very much digital health as well. So it's really an exciting time.
Christina, what about you? What else are you seeing?
I'm also really excited about the trend for medical wearables. Another great company is AliveCor, along with CellScope, and it's another one of these attachments that you can put on your iPhone, and it looks at your electrocardiogram, so your heart's electrical rhythm, and they're already at the point where they're, you know, through an algorithm able to detect things like atrial fibrillation or AFib. So that's, you know, in a couple years from now, perhaps you could see a company like that able to predict a number of days in advance whether or not someone's going to have a heart attack, for instance. I mean, that's something that could save lives, but it's a little bit kind of far off. But I'm certainly keeping an eye on that as opposed to just the pure wellness trend, because these are people that, you know, suffer from often many chronic illnesses and, you know, aren't just looking to be optimized in their health. But they're really, you know, this is potentially able to sort of help them live longer and better.
Let's go back to the phones now. Anne in Calistoga. Anne, good morning.
Is, does there exist any sort of a wearable item, say a watch, that would monitor or measure blood sugar levels accurately enough for a type 1 diabetic to use?
And that's a good question. Sean Duffy, your company deals partly with diabetics and preventing diabetes. Do you know of anything like that?
Yeah, that does not currently exist. It's actually very tough to look at glucose levels through the skin, you know, optically. You know, a number of startups are working on that. And, you know, and honestly, there have been people working on that for 10 years. But so far, you know, it's not happened. It would be an amazing thing if it were able to exist.
Christina, I believe, wasn't one of the research teams at Google working on a contact lens that could measure, I think it was blood glucose, through basically the content of the tears and the aqueous fluid in your eye, something like that?
Yeah, the Google contact lens. That did get a lot of hype when it was first announced in the press. But again, it's one of these things that's 5 to 10 years off. So like Sean said, this kind of non-invasive and continuous monitoring for glucose levels does not currently exist, but I've often heard it called the holy grail for biotech. So whoever can crack that is sure going to make a lot of money and save a lot of people's lives.
I would appreciate just a universal medical record system. I mean, I'm part of a medical network that has really good digital records that I can see and my doctor can see. And it just should not at this day and age feel like an innovation. Like, we have Google apps and Google Docs. Why can't we have universal medical records? Anya Schies, where do you see the venture space in terms of just those basic things that would just make life easier for every single medical consumer, regardless of their need, like universal medical records?
Yeah, you know, it boggles my mind. I can go to any ATM and use my bank card and withdraw cash.
Whether you're on the network or not.
Whether I'm on the network
right.
or not. Why can't I go to any provider, any hospital, and get access to my medical record? It's a great point. And I think that infrastructure is right now being laid. The problem historically has been lack of standards and lack of specific enough standards to enable that technology to exist. But that's changing. And there are a lot of companies working on that problem. And most of them are working on it in very narrow point solutions that, you know, hopefully added together will be the change that we need.
Another listener writes us via email, I would like to add that one of the booming areas in digital health is the concept of telemedicine. An online doctor's appointment is very efficient and less expensive than standard brick-and-mortar care. There are several companies in this space. Can the panel comment on that, Christina?
Telemedicine is just a fascinating area, and I'm so glad that someone brought it up. You know, it's this idea that we can talk to a physician kind of via some kind of video service or even through an iPhone. And these kinds of services are really starting to take off. Kaiser recently reported that about half of its visits now are virtual. So it's not just kind of consumers that are jumping on board. It's also various health systems. I think that there are, you know, we've certainly seen some criticism of telemedicine and, you know, some issues around why it isn't widespread. And certainly there are cases in which it is advisable to see a doctor in person. But the good thing about telemedicine is it could be sort of your first point of interaction. And, you know, perhaps the physician that you speak to via your smartphone says to you, you know, I do think that you need to see someone about that. But they might kind of take a look at your rash or see that you have a cold or flu and be able to sort of diagnose you and potentially even send an e-prescription right there on the spot. And that offers, you know, far more convenience than having to, you know, go to the hospital or see your primary care provider in person.
But I wonder about the human angle. You know, I hate to make yet another Star Trek reference. I already got one tweet from a listener who's like, I never wanted a tricorder. Fine, you can't have one. But I always think back to the EMH, the emergency medical hologram on Voyager, and the whole joke was that he knew everything about medicine and nothing about people. And he had to learn. The whole series was about him learning bedside manner. And I just kind of wonder about that human aspect of medicine, of having a person who is there and says, your care is in my hands, my literal physical hands. And what we lose as we pull away from that and make medicine and healthcare more and more virtual. Stephanie Telenius, is that a concern at all, or am I just being a Luddite?
You know, we interview our coaches for empathy, and they do an amazing job building a long-term continuous relationship with their consumers. And they fill in the gaps between physician visits, and they build a relationship where they actually know more about the patient potentially than the physician. I think telemedicine is going to become the majority of interactions. I think you're going to see consumers use it very frequently. We have, for example, video built into our app, so you can video with a coach. And you can really build a very strong relationship. And I think, to Christina's point, I think it's going to become the norm, and it's going to be much more efficient. People are going to be able to understand what they have an ongoing relationship with their physician, with their coach, and it will become, you know, we have a shortage of primary care physicians in the country. So you're going to see a care team in the cloud helping you along the way on a continuous basis.
We're running out of time in the hour, but I do want to get to one last phone call from Joni in Oakland. Joni, good morning.
Good morning. Great show. Just a couple of comments on the app.
And I'm sorry, Joni, but we're running out of time, so you're going to have to be super brief.
Okay. We've had all this knowledge. We've had all the information. I think the apps are just something else for people to use. I see the people using them still overweight, the next diet, the next fad. I think the healthcare premiums is the best way to reflect, give people motivation to get healthy.
So you see the value in, say, uploading your digital data and getting a discount on your premiums where other people would not?
Actually, I don't want to upload it either, because then, you know, it's a matter of privacy. Google starts sending me messages about healthcare items and being sick. I think it's, you know, a matter of contact with your doctors and your healthcare providers.
Gotcha. So some kind of additional deeper measures. Okay. Joni, thanks for the call. Much appreciated. Wish we had more time to talk during this hour. There's a million other things we could discuss, but I think this is a good way to kind of dip our toe into the water. Many thanks to our guest, Stephanie Telenius, the founder and CEO of the personal coaching app Vita Health. Stephanie, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you.
Sean Duffy, co-founder and CEO of Omada Health, the startup that coaches people through chronic conditions. Sean, thank you.
Thank you.
Anya Shees, the founder of the digital health VC fund Healthy Ventures. Anya, glad to have had you with us.
Thank you.
And KQED's Christina Farr, the editor of our health technology blog, The Future of You. Thanks, Christina.
Thanks for having me.
Forum is produced by Irene Noguchi, Tina Laubert, Judy Campbell, and Susan Britton. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement editor is Amanda Stupai, and we get online support from David Marks. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our interns are Nunu Teo and Megan Sussman. I'm Joshua Johnson of KQED News. Michael Krasny is back on Monday. Thank you so much for listening. This is Forum from KQED Public Radio.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.